This is the Friday, March 1st, 2019 version of the Market Plus segment. Joining us now is Tom Fitzemeyer. Tom, welcome back.
Thanks, Delaney.
Tom, let's start out talking here about the cotton market since we didn't get to talk about that. And they had a pretty exciting week this week, put on 84 cents since last Friday's close. Was it just because of kind of the excitement revolving around the U.S.-China trade talks?
I think so. I don't know. I don't think it's going to go very far. Maybe another buck. Two, maybe, on a corrective bounce, but I don't see it doing anything. I just think this China thing is continue to hang over the cotton market, and I think there's a perception that we're probably going to see a little shifting of some soybeans to cotton this summer. So, I don't see the cotton market doing much on the upside.
Is the longer term trend then for cotton still pretty bearish?
I don't know that it's particularly bearish. I just think it's
or
more
neutral.
Sideways, okay. I guess, in my mind.
So still staying within that 73 to
76 on the upside,
okay.
Maybe.
And if we do get a trade deal in place, what's that going to do for the cotton markets then? Just a small bounce, or could we expect to see prices back up around the $80 mark?
No, you won't get it that high. We've been talking about this bounce from this trade deal forever. It has a high probability of being a buy the rumor, sell the fact thing. So I'm hoping that that's the bounce that gets us to 76. So going beyond that is going to be, it's going to have to be a really big surprise.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about strategy, specifically for soybeans. You said you could see, not in the near future maybe, but 60 to 70 cents lower in the soybean contracts. What strategy should producers be taking with that in mind, that maybe at some point in the future, uncertainty, but we could see another drop that low?
We've got two strategies we've been implementing. We're doing scale-up selling on a November contract for new crop beans, starting at about 960, figuring we're going to be done probably up against $10, so scale up in whatever fashion you think you're comfortable with there. If you're not real comfortable selling the future hedge derived, whatever, a futures type contract, and you want to use options, then I guess I'd look at buying 950 puts. If that's a little pricey for you, go out and sell 1040, 1060 calls to help pay for it. And I guess those are the two main strategies we're implementing. And within that range, whatever you use, kind of depends on how comfortable you are with those particular positions, I guess.
Okay. Tom, when you look at the futures contract out right now, I think November closed around 9:45 on Friday.
Right.
Is that enough for producers to make money, or should they be waiting to see better prices? I hate to even ask that because it's like we're in this uncertain period.
Well, waiting for 960 to 995 is waiting for better prices, I think. The downside potential here with this huge carryout is big. And we were sort of bailed out last year by that $1.65, whatever
right.
You want to call
market
it, compensate
yeah.
for the tariffs. And I seriously doubt we're going to see that this year. So you're kind of going to be on your own. We haven't heard the official number in terms of what the February average turned out for
mm-hmm.
the price
for
support.
Crop insurance.
But it looks like it's going to be pretty comparable to what it was last year for both corn and beans. So. We're sort of back to whatever you feel comfortable with, whatever you think you can make work.
Okay, whatever works for your balance sheet.
Correct.
Okay. Tom, we've got a question here from Dean in South Dakota, a little bit of a softball question. I'm interested to hear your answer. What do you think about seeing $5 cash corn in 2020?
Well, I mean, you can never say never.
Mm-hmm.
You can always put together a scenario where that's possible, where China buys a big chunk of corn, where we do have planting delays like we kind of talked about possibility in the show, and you see acreage shifting, all this subsoil moisture that we've got that looked great going in the spring dries up, and we have a crop problem this summer. Barring all those things, livestock numbers aren't going to change all that much, so feed's kind of somewhat set. If you get to 430 or 450, you better thank your lucky stars and be making some sales. I just think we're a year or two away from having those kind of big numbers in corn. And Argentina's having another big crop this year, which is going to be a problem, which we really benefited from last year, that's going to be a problem this year. So you never say never, but it seems unlikely to me.
Well, and I want to talk about that from a bigger picture here. We had the kind of years of 12, 13, 14. We had a drought in there. Are we at a period now with technology and production in other countries where we probably won't see $5, $6 corn again because of the technology that we have in place now?
See, that's my point. I had somebody tell me the other day, well, we've had 5 good years of corn production. We're bound to have a bad year this year. Mm-hmm. Well, no, we're going into it with good subsoil. All the things you mentioned, technology's improved, seed technology's improved.
They have like the drought-resistant corn.
Drought-resistant hybrids and all that stuff. I think the bar is higher, and it's harder to have a crop problem. And then you add into that how good everybody else in the world is at producing corn, and it's just tougher.
Yeah,
I think.
And ethanol hasn't been doing relatively well. We talked about it just a little bit on the show, but I want to kind of pick your brain about that a little bit more. We've seen ethanol margins remain tight. We've seen facilities close down or limit production. Wednesday's prices, however, this past week traded to the highest spot price since August. Does that give you any?
And the blending rate is as good as it's been in several months too. So hopefully that means they're going to start to do some blending. The problem is the RIN market, mm-hmm. and that's sort of the end around that'll allows the reduction in actual blending of ethanol. And until that issue gets resolved, I don't know. I think the ethanol industry is going to struggle. Now everybody's got high hopes for this E15 year-round business, and maybe that's certainly having it's better than not having it. But we need to see some response here from ethanol producers, because they haven't been, and stocks have been continuing to be strong. So we got to get some of that worked out before that's going to be once again. It's probably stable, probably isn't going to go down much, but the big moves up are probably stalled out for quite some time.
You mentioned E15 year-round, and this week we saw some discrepancy between what Secretary Perdue said in his meetings in D.C. and what EPA Administrator Wheeler said. It sounds like the USDA thinks we're not going to get E15 by June 1st, and EPA thinks we are. How much is that going to change the ethanol or corn market if we do or we don't?
Well, there's a little politics there. I think the EPA is trying to make it look like they're really
right
before us, and they're really working hard to get it done as fast as they can. And that sounds good. I hope they're right, but I guess I'm a little skeptical.
Does it really change the corn balance sheet, though, if we do get E15 passed by June 1st?
Well, there's not that many pumps. Here in Iowa, there's several stations that have started introducing it, so it seems like it's come a lot. But if you get outside of the state, there's not that hardly any blender pumps. So you got to have the pumps to be able to do that, and there just aren't all that many of them yet.
So really, it might be more of a long-term thing of manufacturers or car folks or gasoline companies switching to E15 in the future now that they have the ability to do it.
Well, they're using these RINs like crazy to avoid blending now. What would change to make them not want to do that? Mm-hmm. That's what I get back to. I just think you're probably right. It's going to help, but it's going to be really slow going and not a big boost to the market like you'd like to hope it would be.
Right. All right. Tom Fitzmaier, thank you so much.
Thanks, Delaney.
Join us again next week when we explore developments in the U.S.-China trade war, and Elaine Cubb will join me at the Market to Market table. Until then, thanks for watching, listening, or reading. I'm Delaney Howell. Have a great week.